Know the Source on One Radio Network.
Talk to Patrick now, 888-663-6386, or email patrick@oneradionetwork.com.
Having a fun time with Ogenus von der Planets, We Want to Live. .com. It's a little bit after 10 Central Time, 888-663-6386. Ogenus, do we face some kind of challenges, some body type, some people, with just with not having any carbs? Some kind of ketosis thing goes on?
Well, you're going to have to make that a little bit more clear what you're asking.
In other words, I've read about and heard about ideas if you just do a lot of animal foods, a lot of protein, without any kind of complex carbohydrates, that a ketosis, ketogenic kind of a thing can happen, and it's not good.
Well, I haven't found that that's necessarily so.
Uh-huh.
And toxins of any sort will cause a breakdown of tissue, which causes ketones. Ketones are the breaking down of proteins in the body. So when these ketones form, a lot of the medical profession or pharmaceutical profession will point at the kidneys and say, see, they're eating too much protein. They need to cut down on protein because they're having cellular destruction. And it's like, it's very academic and rather stupid, and they're trained to be stupid. I'm sorry I have to be that, you know, that direct about it, but it is stupidity. When you say, oh, we have got a breakdown of proteins in the body, that's bad, so we stop eating protein. Most ridiculous thing in the world. If you've got a broken down house that's built with bricks, you don't stop rebuilding the thing with bricks because you've got broken bricks. It's an absurd concept. So you need to replace those with good sound proteins. High ketone a blood test will just indicate that somebody's breaking down some toxic cells in the body, and therefore that protein comes from that source, not a healthy source. The same with cholesterol. They finally, 20 years ago, said, oh, that's right, yeah, we just don't have bad cholesterol. We have cholesterols which are so-called bad cholesterols, but those are the waste cholesterols, the ones that the body's getting rid of. So not, they're not a problem in the first place. The same with these ketones. It just, and whether they're liver ketones, kidney ketones, no matter what it is, those are the cells that have been damaged that are being broken down to be eliminated from the body. That's a good thing. And you certainly don't want to stop eating proteins like raw meat, because you will not rebuild and heal. You will not get stronger along with the detoxification.
Interesting. From Josh, can you ask Ogenus about electromagnetic fields? How can we protect ourselves from them, and how the primal diet might help protect from EMFs?
Well, you need to stay. You need to get a tri-field meter that will register electromagnetic fields, electrical fields, and radiation fields, like from a cell phone, not radiation from radiation fallout. And you put those, turn the meter on and see how far away from your computer or a light or a machine of any kind, especially blenders. Blenders produce the highest, one of the highest, and your electric blankets also produce one of the highest EMF fields. You just stay away from them. 3 milligals alters the molecular structure of cells, and not favorably so. So that is a problem. You just have to stay away. Now, in my car, I have a Prius hybrid, so it's a high electrical field around my right leg. So what I did was I created a outer magnetic field that would draw any that would be excessively accumulating in my legs. I built a pillow, a magnetic pillow, and I took 1-inch magnets, circular magnets, and I put them in 3 concentric circles and glued them onto a lattice material. And I alternated the polarity of the magnets to north-south, all the way around in those circles.
How many times?
And I put two feather pillows, thin feather pillows, on either side of that, and then put that in its own pillowcase. And the pillow's probably about 16 inches by 16, maybe 18 inches by 18, and I sit on that. Now, when I first got the car, if I drove like to San Diego, it would take 2.5 hours. The back of my thigh, right thigh that handled the foot pedal, would get very painful, sore from the EMF field. When I built that pillow, then I had no problem.
Isn't that interesting? I have a Prius as well. And, boy, I'd love to see how you've done that sometime. If you ever could put that on the web, I'd like to try play with that idea.
I've got so many things.
I know you got so. You know what I do, too? I have a...
Karen comes to my workshop in Cincinnati. I'll draw you a little map.
Oh, you could show me how to do it. I have a golden retriever that I take everywhere with the Prius, and I put the meter on there, and I laid some really thick kind of aluminum stuff that I got at Home Depot.
Uh-huh.
Underneath a blanket on the back seat, which protects her from those EMFs from the battery. So, yeah.
Well, that battery is not that bad.
It's not that bad, but...
In the Honda, it's atrocious. The passengers are sitting on that battery back there. It's about 75 milligals or higher.
Uh-huh.
In the Prius, it's very small back there. The passenger, the front seat passenger and the driver are getting most of it.
Yeah. Have you ever seen, Igenis, any contraptions, necklaces, or things like that that you can wear that protects? Have you ever seen
anything? Well, I've experimented with those since 1990.
Yeah.
And I only found the bio shield reduced in EMF field by a half a milligals, which is really nothing when you're talking about 35 to 75 milligals.
Yeah.
But I still will put one on my cell phone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. With those little buttons on the other side.
My cell phone never gets near my head.
Yeah.
I put it in speakerphone, and I do not hold it while it's in transmission.
Have you looked into the idea of these grounding pads being grounded to protect?
Like I said, I don't agree with those. That's why I built my own magnetic pillow, and I know that works. I haven't found those others to work. Now, some people say it does affect them, but it didn't affect me.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email from Allie. Can a female do well on a diet with non-flesh animal foods, still eating butter, raw eggs, cod liver oil? I tried fresh foods for a year raw, mainly, and it constipated me. Any ideas for that?
Well, it's not a true constipation. A true constipation is when you have a block in the intestines. Most people, when they get on to a healthy diet, especially if they've altered from a vegan or vegetarian diet, are nutrient starved. So all of a sudden the body gets some incredible nutrients and is trying to absorb every bit of it. And therefore it will be very dry. Also the E. coli has been starved, and when it gets the fats, in the later stages of digestion, the preferable ones, the more fresh ones, they never see or get. And they will just hold on to the fecal matter, trying to break everything down and digest it.
Hmm.
That's not true constipation. However, it is uncomfortable. And what I tell people to do there is take 3 tablespoons each of butter, coconut cream, and dairy cream, and just a quarter teaspoon of butter, of honey, unheated honey, and they mix that together in like a 4-ounce jelly jar. They do this right before they go to bed at night. They immerse it with a lid on it, of course, in a bowl of hot water, hot enough to make the hand uncomfortable after 5 seconds, but not burn it. And then that'll bring it up to about body temperature in about 3 to 4 minutes, and then take a bulb syringe and insert that as a suppository.
Oh.
Not to be moved, and roll your belly, get down on your, supposed to be on your knees anyway, and then put your face down on the bed or floor, wherever you're doing it, roll your stomach like a belly dancer, and get it to move up the descending colon. then lie on your right side, lift your right leg, I mean left leg, and roll your stomach like a belly dancer again, and get it to move across the transverse colon and down into the ascending colon. And then you will feed the E. coli directly some very fresh fats so they won't hold on to that fecal matter. Now, some people, if they've been starving, they're very thin, and they've been on a vegan diet or a vegetarian diet for a very long time, then they may need to do that every 2 to 3 days. Other people will only need to do it once a week or once a month.
So you're actually feeding the bugs?
You're actually, well, those bugs are what digest everything.
Right. So you have butter, coconut cream, what else?
And dairy cream.
And you kind of mix it all together and get it liquid by just warming it ever so gently.
You need to get a body temperature so you don't evacuate it. Because if you put something cold in your rectum, your body's will want to flush it out.
Yeah. And so you put that right up your bum, huh?
Yep.
And boy, just feed those guys.
Directly, yeah. And it gets rid of depression. It does a lot of good things.
Yeah. So we're just this massogenous of bacteria all over the place.
150 bacterial genes to every one human gene. We are bacteria.
Yep. And so most of the feces and bowel movements, most of that is bacteria?
Correct.
Uh-huh. So is it ever called for, in your opinion, to kill some of these with maybe colloidal silver or this or that?
Colloidal silver is a metal poisoning. Not a good idea. Better than antibiotics. In fact, it can be worse than antibiotics.
You never want to try to kill anything.
Well, you're killing yourself. You're killing your digestive processes. Just remember that all functions of the body, no matter what they are done by bacteria. Bacteria is everything.
Even cancer cells. So let's ask this question, because this leads right in from Beverly. When you talk to Ogenist on Thursday, please ask him to explain why cancer forms, our cells form cancer cells and assemble them into tumors to save our lives to get us well. Is that right?
And also, that is correct.
So give us your idea. We just had a very elegant description of that from Andreas Moritz, who I think he'd really like this. Well, I think he's on the same track as you. What is your understanding of what's going on with these things we call
Had four forms of cancer, I pretty much know what cancer is, and I've addressed it, probably 1,500 people in the last 30 years, reversing 95% of it. What cancer is the body's collection of dead cells.
Mm-hmm.
That begins because the body does not have what it takes or can't do it to break down dead cells, to dissolve them, the lymphatic system is responsible for that. It's supposed to dissolve those dead cells, put it in the connective tissue to be perspired out of the body. So if the lymphatic system gets jammed, especially with trans fatty acids, that's plastic fats, hydrogenated vegetable oils that crystallize in the body, they jam the system.
They jam it up.
Right. And then also, if your liver is not producing the proper forms of bile, then what the lymphatic system uses, fats, to dissolve these dead cells will not be available. So there are several reasons how you can get cancer. And it's just a collection of dead cells. Now, in a benign tumor, the dead cells will collect, but there's no veins into it, there's no arteries, there's no capillary circulation into a benign tumor. So if your body wants to decompose the benign tumor, it could take 30, 40 years or not at all, and you'll be living with a benign tumor. If you have a cancerous tumor, it's preferable because the cancer cell is a very rare cell. It exists in the area of about 50 to even 200, 150 to 200 dead cells. It's an aesthete. It can live on its own as a hermit. You do have circulation into a cancerous tumor because the cancer cells have to be fed to keep alive. However, when your body gets healthy enough and it plans on it, when you have a cancerous tumor, the body will, the cancer cells will die, and they let off a serum. And that serum is a solvent which can instantly, you know, 3 to 5 days even, dissolve a tumor and disappear. But your body has to be well enough to handle the byproducts of that dissolved tissue, which will be highly toxic.
So
concentrate, yeah. They can melt the skin away.
So the challenge is, most people, is it fair to say, most people dealing with this whole paradigm of a tumor, they're not strong enough or well enough with the right nutrition, so they have to deal with it, or they end up dealing with it in a whole juxtaposition away.
Right. Well, not only that, they may have a breakdown in the lymphatic system or breakdown in the liver, or a breakdown in both.
So it's a very delicate thing to understand. So this idea,
and anybody gets into a cancer state, they're in a bad situation, yeah, systemically.
Sure. So this lymph system and the sweating, these are two key things here.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm.
And I find that the water soaking is much better than any kind of dry heat or steam heat, for preferable to saunas and steam baths, because the temperatures are anywhere from 140 to 212 degrees in those forms, and they can damage the mucous membranes, and the lungs are part of that, and the sinuses with repeated use. And also it'll destroy vitamins in your own tissue and enzymes in your own tissue in your skin. So when you keep it below, you know, 108 degrees, 110 degrees, let's say maximum, you don't destroy those properties.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's why we like the far infrared. I think it's around 103 to 105, and plus your head is out of the thing.
But the problem with that is that you've got an airspace of 1 foot, and your body can cool it. So you're really not going to get that hot.
You mean the internal body temperature?
Correct, yes. And you need to get it up to about 102 degrees within an inch and a half under the skin, inch to an inch and a half, to get up to the lymph glands affect them. Mm.
They claim they get an internal body temperature of 105, but that's a claim.
Yeah, I've never seen it, and when I utilize those, they don't work as well as the direct contact of water. You know, so when you're in a bath, you can be very still, and the water doesn't seem that warm. Then you move a fraction of an inch, and all of a sudden the water heats you quickly.
So do you actually...
In an airspace, you've got a foot a space between the air's hottest point and the body. So your body can cool that space. So if you're going to be in an infrared sauna, you have to keep the body moving.
Keep it moving. That's interesting.
In a water environment, you do not.
Interesting. Here is from Chris from Florida. What are Ajahnist's thoughts on what meat does to the liver? From what I've heard from Ajahnist, his thoughts are opposed to Andreas Mritz, who's a vegetarian advocate. Yeah, so obviously you don't believe that liver or meat has any detrimental effects to the liver, because your liver is fine, thank you.
Well, my liver, I ate a poison mushroom in 1981 by accident, a death cap, and it destroyed 90% of my liver. And I was only eating raw meat once a day, 3 days a week. So I was only having three meat meals weekly. And my progression through that poison mushroom and the damaged liver was very slow for a year and a half. And then I just said, okay, I've got to do something different. It's too slow. And I began eating raw meat daily, twice daily, and the amount of change was tremendous. My liver was rebuilt in 3 years.
Here's an email from Kevin. I'm so upset I missed you in South Florida. I hope you come back soon. My question is, can you share your thoughts on the so-called zero-carb craze? Is this healthy for long periods of time, as some claim to be doing and being in good health?
Well, you can't be completely carb,
carb-free.
carb-free. There's another word that I wanted that was a little bit more dramatic, but I couldn't find it. Anyway, you can't be carb-free. Even meats have carbs in them. You know, so there's not going to be any carb-free environment in the human body and the foods that we can eat. Even milk is quite a bit of carbs. Everything has carbs in it. I do not like, though, because I've seen demineralization from eating a lot of sweet fruits and too much vegetable juices.
Mm.
You know, but it's more the over-alkalinization than it is the carbs. We have a large pancreas, 2.5 times the size that we need to handle a lot of carbs. However, carbs, I found, cause high over-emotionality. And that is detrimental to a peaceful, happy lifestyle.
Hmm. Kind of like going crazy after a pizza?
Yes.
Kind of like that. Well, what is the key to keeping the blood sugar balanced? Is there something kind of systemically inferior going on with the pancreas, agenous, in that situation?
Not necessarily. The body, you have to look at how the body handles carbs. When it has carbs, carbs are usually used in the citric acid cycle. That is the cycle of producing energy. Now, normally, the highest produced energy is from fat. 80% fat, 15% protein in the form of pyruvate, which is a protein sugar, and then either vitamin C or some high carbohydrate. So 20% of that cycle is really a form of carbohydrate. So we need a certain amount to be able to utilize fat as energy, and fat gives us 2.5 times more energy than a carb or protein when they're made into an acetate, which is a fat. And it's a complicated process. So what I tell people to do, if they're eating fruit, always eat a fat with it.
Ah, food and fat.
Yes, that'll slow the carb reaction down, and it will help utilize that fat as an energy source.
So coconut cream or coconut butter, that's nice with fruit?
Yes, and that's a good detoxifying one, and your body can make a lot of alcohols from the carbs, which are cleansing, help dissolve dead cells, so you can help reverse cancer. But all of that needs to be, you know, finitely tuned if you want to get well fast.
If someone has a tendency to be low blood sugar or high or kind of erratic, what's going on in the body? I mean, what is it? What would be the systemic cause of that?
If they have high carbohydrates, or they having high and low blood sugar?
Or just blood sugar issues in general, where they really have to watch their blood sugar. If they don't eat, then the blood sugar gets low, or if they eat too much.
That's usually because they're eating processed sugars.
Uh-huh.
If they've been a vegetarian or a vegan a long time, even eating fruit will cause that reaction very rapidly. I remember when I was a fruitarian, it made my diabetes, crazy. I would stand up, from a sitting position or lying down position, and I would get dizzy.
Yeah.
And pass out, even black out.
Huh.
Back to my diabetic days.
You were a fruitarian, were you?
Yes, I was a fruitarian for almost 6 years.
Did you feel fruity when you did that?
Oh, yes. I was very unstable and very overly emotional. I was a diehard evangelic vegan.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, I would say that killing is bad and, that can't be killing. Of course, I wasn't taking into account that when I rip the leaf off of a plant that I'm killing it, too, and I'm dismembering it.
Well, you just didn't hear that mustard green scream when you did
that. That's right. Doesn't mean it wasn't alive, but if you look at the Baxter experiments of the early 70s, when he hooked the electrodes of a polygraph machine to plants, the plants had memory, they had intelligence, they had emotion, they had everything. It's just that we're not sensitive enough to realize it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting how more and more the vegans, vegetarians are becoming more broad-minded. I spent Saturday with David Wolf, one of the foremost vegans right in the world, and he's so opened up over the years about being dogmatic against meat and animal foods. It's so different from what he was 10 years ago. But
well, yeah, when I met him 10 years ago, I said, David, you don't have the system of those eight that I saw were able to do it, and you're going to hit the wall in 7 years, and he did.
Hmm. Here's an email from Mark in Guam. My question for Agnes is, does he feel it's beneficial to take a day off or two from eating meats, fats, and cleanse with green juices?
Well, I never think that that's a good idea as a practice and a principle, because the body is an acidic system. It needs the acids to digest foods. A day or two without proteins means that your body's going to eat itself, and it will eat the good and the bad cells, so you'll be remaking toxicity into the system. If you're eating good organic meats and dairy, you're not going to be, the body won't have to rely upon eating toxicity of itself to maintain itself. So I don't suggest fasting or even juice feasting as a viable thing. I do suggest sometimes eating very small amounts, like a golf ball size of meat, 4 or 5 times a day, and reducing the consumption of everything to a very small amount just to give the body a break.
Uh-huh.
However, I've resolved that by just feeding people a lot of eggs, because eggs digest in 27 minutes. It gives the, you know, using 5 inches of the digestive tract to absorb, to complete the digestion and absorption of eggs. So basically, the digestive tract gets an entire vacation.
Why is it when...
But yet concentrated nutrients.
Yeah. I've experimented with raw eggs and adding different things to it, and I seem to have a difficult time of digesting it. What is that telling you about your host digestive system if the raw eggs only work when I do them alone?
Well, that's normal.
Is that normal?
Yeah, it's normal.
Well, I'm glad I'm normal. I just thought I was crazy.
That's normal.
Okay.
People who are very fortunate, who can digest eggs mixed with anything, are extremely fortunate.
Oh, I see. It's more normal just to be able to do the eggs.
I was 20 years on this diet before I could make a milkshake without a stomach ache.
I'll be doing. Well, I don't feel so badly then. I thought there was...
Anyway, the eggs are very easily digestible when they're alone.
Yeah.
When you mix them with milk, milk is the next easiest thing to digest, but it still takes 6 to 10 hours as opposed to 27 minutes.
Yeah, I mixed them with raw cream the other day, 4 or 5 eggs.
Ooh.
And I felt like I had a brick in my stomach all day.
Yes.
All day.
That'll be very difficult.
Cream
is very difficult to digest.
Oh, is it?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. So be careful.
Butter is the easiest.
What is?
So if you've got, you know, a poor digestive tract, or your liver isn't making the 60 varieties of bile to make the 60 varieties of cholesterol that do everything for us, or that we use to do everything in the body, that's lubrication, protection, dissolving, and giving us energy, all of those cholesterols, you've got a problem when you have the cream. The cream takes all 60 varieties of bile, so your liver has to be in very good shape to do that.
60 varieties of bile, my goodness.
Which makes 60 varieties of cholesterol.
Yeah. Well, you know, you could just take a statin drug and get rid of all that cholesterol.
And without the cholesterol, you will not function.
That's right. Did you see, Agnes, we were talking with a lady. I think just the Lipitor alone is a $12 to $15 billion worldwide phenomenon.
Absolutely. Well, look what they've done. They've said, okay, people who have high cholesterol are in danger of heart attacks and all kinds of other nonsense.
Yeah.
And it's just the opposite. I had angina, and I had 300 heart attacks from the age of 15 and a half to the age of 22.
What do you mean 300? I mean, how do you know that?
Oh, I count them. After my third polio vaccine, I got juvenile diabetes and angina pectoris. Angina pectoris are muscle spasms in and around the heart. Now, when they saw me holding my chest and passing, I was autistic, so I really couldn't communicate until I was 22. So they would see me grabbing my chest, falling to the left, and passing out. also my mother took me to a cardiologist, and they hooked me up to the EKG and EEG and did all the tests. But what they looked for is they looked for congenital malformation or congestion. And, of course, I was 15 and a half years old. I had none of those other things, or else the congenital heart disease would have come up early in my life. But none of that existed. They didn't look at the fact that the chemicals in the vaccine entered my muscle tissue, the heart, and caused muscle spasms. It's just like you can't see congenital deformation in the muscles nor congestion in the muscles when you have lactic acid buildup. That's just the end product of metabolism. Hmm. And if that collects in the muscles, you get a Charlie horse. Well, that's what the kind of chemical assault on my heart from the vaccine with the mercury, the formaldehyde, the aluminum, ether, and detergents, and 40-some other toxins in that polio vaccine. So they went into the heart muscles and were causing Charlie horses. So those are heart attacks.
Those are heart attacks. Huh?
Those are heart attacks.
Wow.
But I'm glad they didn't diagnose it because they didn't give me any medication. They just said it was all in my head. That's pretty good when you can cause yourself heart attacks and pass out.
That's great, man.
That's pretty evolved mentally, right?
Oh, man. Osh and his Valder Planets is our guest. If we want to live, wewanttolive.com.
And it's numeral two.
Yeah, numeral we want to live. To live.
Numeral two.
Yeah. And Patrick Timpone, One Radio Network. We're live every morning between 9 and 11 o'clock. Don't forget, we have all the archives, over 1,300, absolutely free worldwide, no cost, not a penny, nothing, not a Federal Reserve note, nothing. You just get them all free. It's 25 before the hour. Now let's get crazy the last half hour, okay? Let's see how much trouble we can get into. Let's start with this question about urine therapy. This is from Cheryl in Cypress, Texas. Please ask Ajanis about urine therapy and hypothyroid. My 19-year-old son and I have used this therapy for almost a year. More recently, while following Ajanis' diet mostly, my son completely cured his hypothyroidism and has been off the medicine for 3 months. Mine went up and down for several months and finally stabilized. I'm on less medicine than before. And there's really some improvement. Any thoughts on this?
Well, urine therapy, when you consider what urine is, then you'll understand it. Urine is nothing other than the blood without the red and white blood cells in concentration and ammonia added to it. Now, the kidneys produce ammonia. They produce ammonia to repel the red and white blood cells from entering the kidney, because if you urinated your red and white blood cells every time you urinated, of course you'd be anemic. So that's what happens. Now, whatever's left, you know, without the red and white blood cells is the concentration nutrients that we're feeding the blood and other cells. So reprocessing, those nutrients is a wise thing if you do not digest your proteins well the first time through. In India, where they eat a lot of dairy, raw dairy, and no meats, they still have protein deficiencies, so they drink their urine as a regular practice. And it's fine. On this diet with lots of raw meat and raw dairy, I haven't found that it is necessary. But some people, when they first get onto the diet, won't be digesting the proteins, all the proteins that they need, all 22 amino acids properly. So those people, if they drank their urine, would recycle those proteins one more time and have a better chance of digesting and utilizing them. And it works 90% of the time.
Here's an email from Robert. He says, I don't agree with Ajanis about the far infrared sauna. Airspace has nothing to do with it. The body is heated from the inside out.
Well, the body never raises its own temperature above 100 degrees except in fever. So I don't know where that person comes up with that. You know, the body does not heat itself up to 105 degrees except in rare cases of fever. So I don't understand.
Let's see. Here's another email from the UK. Could you ask Ajnus about, ankylosing spondylitis. Is there a cure?
Well, we had a...
That was another question. Yeah, same
thing. Yeah, another question earlier about that. And, of course, that is a blocking of the flow of the lymphatic system to get to joints and other areas of the body. And, of course, toxins are forming as a process of that, and that's a disease. If you can get the lymphatic system moving with hot baths, or if you get into a, an infrared sauna, you better move around a lot, and then it'll work. It'll break that down. It'll melt it down so your lymphatic system can start cleansing itself.
Coda wants to know, what can you do if one doesn't have a gallbladder?
Oh, well, you have to eat small amounts of fat at a time. We have a gallbladder. A gallbladder doesn't produce anything. It's a reserve of bile. The liver produces the bile, stores in the gallbladder. Now, normally we contain enough bile in the gallbladder to digest 10 to 20 pounds of fat in 24 to 48 hours. So when we were hunting years ago, just several hundred years ago, we'd kill an animal, we'd eat the fat first. And sometimes we'd eat 10 to 20 pounds in 48 hours. If you did that without a gallbladder, without that reserve of bile, of course you'd have diarrhea or vomit because you couldn't break down all those fats. If you're lacking a gallbladder, then you have no high reserve. So sitting down to a quart or even a pint of ice cream is not a good idea.
Oh, really? Gosh.
So if you have a gallbladder, then you just, then you can do that kind of thing. If you don't, then you have to eat small amounts of fat throughout the day, as much as the liver can produce bile to keep up with it.
Another question, in the idea of cooking, what does Ajnus think about dehydrating meat like jerky, or doing the bone broth idea of the Weston Price, cooking the bones?
Well, anytime you cook anything, you're cauterizing the minerals, especially the alkalinizing ones like calcium, phosphorus, magnesium, and potassium. The low levels of heat destroy the, completely cauterize the calcium.
Cauterize, what does that mean?
Let's say you take, it's burning it into a hard substance, like taking malleable clay and firing it at any cone. It's going to be a brittle, hard substance. That's what happens to minerals. So, it's not the greatest idea, not a way to handle it. You're going to get over mineralizations because your body's trying to use a lot of it. They have a tendency to be magnetic and bind and adhere to each other when they're cauterized. When they're non-cauterized, your body always creates a balance of mineralizations so you don't over-mineralize. So that's what I think about the cooking. Any other process, that will
Dehydrating, he asked about?
Yeah, dehydrating. Well, let me give you an example. If I dehydrated your body, would you come back to life?
Only with a whole lot of water.
No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't come back to life. You'd be dead.
You'd be dead.
So the Eskimos, yearly, they will make a pemmican. They take meat and they dry it, beat it into a till it becomes a flour, and then they'll add lard to it and bake it in the sun. And then make blocks of it, bricks of it, like 90-pound bricks.
Wow.
Each person will have a 90-pound brick. They only eat that if they can't find anything in the wild, if they can't find any fresh food.
It doesn't sound very good.
Well, it will give you some energy and keep you alive. However, they don't have to use it. They bury it next spring. They will not eat it because they know it's vitamin enzyme, and it's very deficient, very difficult to digest.
Speaking of burying it, I have a feed my golden and cat grass-fed meat. Do you think it'd be interesting or healthful for them to do the high meat and put it out on the counter and let it get really spicy and then give it to them?
Cats do not like old meat.
But dogs will eat it.
Dogs love it.
And why is it good for them and us?
Well, it's already pre-digested.
Yeah.
The bacteria in the meat itself has pre-digested it. So that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. Is that why animals bury their meat?
That's why many animals bury their meats, yes. Mm-hmm. They'll digest them and utilize more of it.
I think my dog just buries their bones so we can go back to Whole Foods and get another one. <It's> like, she buries them and doesn't find them, you know. So, Bria, it's over there, and, you know, I have to dig it up for her and show her where it is. She just likes to bury them, I think.
No, she'll wait for the odor to get strong.
Really?
She'll dig it up.
Yeah. So do you still do the high meat thing where you let meat just kind of get really feisty in a jar on the counter?
Absolutely.
Do you really?
Absolutely.
Man, you are my hero if you can eat that stuff. Would you please ask Osteogenes, what is the easiest fat to digest?
The egg yolk.
Egg yolk.
Then butter next.
Mm-hmm.
Then any other fat, then cream is the hardest. But yet, cream is the only one that will completely feed and nourish the brain and nervous system.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you're getting all kinds of pro, foreign, persona, heat, wanting to get into a debate with you on this. Oh, God. So I'll pass some of these off. Does Agnes think that we get stem cells from the meat and organs when we eat them raw?
Yes, we do. But, you know, most of them are adult stem cells. If you get the bone marrow, then you can get the, embryonic type stem cells, the ones that can become any cell in the body, that could become a heart cell, a liver cell. Your adult stem cells are stem cells that are natural to a particular organ or body part.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But in bone marrow, you can get the type that transform into any kind of cell.
Boy, it's pretty magical stuff. You can get in there and get that bone marrow, isn't it?
Oh, wonderful.
Boy, you see animals like dogs, they will just do whatever they can to get that out. They'll work all day long, man.
On one bone.
On one bone, just to get that bone marrow.
Yep.
So they know what's going on, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. They know. And then you talk about animals and vegetarian. I love to watch Bria sometimes, my golden Agnes, and she will just scout around and shop around for just the right piece of grass.
Yes.
Just for an hour and, you know, look around, and all of a sudden she'll say, oh, there it is. And she'll just take a couple pieces of grass. And isn't it amazing? I guess we have that instinct ourselves. We just have to kind of flesh that out a little bit.
Well, we don't have the instincts that they do. We're so adulterated in our diets and lifestyles and everything. It's very hard for people to have good instinct and intuition.
Yeah. So how are you and the Federales getting along? Are you behaving yourselves?
Well, they don't think I am.
I know. They're always giving
me hard. I want raw milk and I want raw foods, and they don't want it. They work for, you know, Dow and Monsanto and those guys. They're not interested in our health. If they did, they wouldn't be creating these silly, E. coli campaigns and creating the monster so that, you know, we will get robbed of our nutrients.
Hmm.
They don't want us to be healthy for the profits of Monsanto, and there are some people who believe that there's a conspiracy to lower the population by the government, and there is some, you know, good support for that. If you read that Kissinger report in the 60s that say, you know, we need to decrease the population, we need to poison people with vaccines and other injectable drugs, poison the food supply and stuff like that to lower population,
mm-hmm.
because it's going to get out of hand. And, you know, by the year 1999, I think he said, or 2000, 2001, and that we need to take dramatic steps to lower the population. Well, the War Department in the mid-1960s made that a whole study. So they studied biological warfare, chemical, contamination of whole groups of people, including 1 million people in Mississippi in the 50s, in the 60s and 70s. So, there seems to be a radical charge by the federal government that is catering to this kind of consciousness or lack of consciousness and to depriving us of health and happiness to get rid of many of us. And I'm not going to let him do it, you know, as long as I can move.
As long as you're moving. You know, we've come across something I just wanted to throw out there to you, Agnes. I think you might find this fascinating. There's a fellow, he's an attorney, Dr. Ed Rivera. Have you ever heard of him? Ed Rivera. He's out by you in California, and he's been studying freedom kind of things in the Constitution, the Articles of Confederation, the Declaration of Independence. And I'm taking a course that he's teaching, and he can show you with their written laws, literally, not, you know, not a theory or just making stuff up to make it sound good, that the federal government has absolutely no jurisdiction over you or I or anyone unless you live on federal lands or state parks or Washington, D.C. or Guam. So this could be...
You know, that is true if you're, you know, I studied the same things. But in case after case, mainly involving the IRS, the courts have rejected it. And even though it may be true law, what Mr. Rivera is saying, the courts make the law.
Yeah, you're right, because they don't play fair.
They don't play fair at all.
You've got to stay out of courts. And
very corrupt.
Yeah, but I believe there is a way that in the future, if done properly, that you can keep them from doing stuff to you by getting them having to show that they do have jurisdiction just to mess with you. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, what I'm doing is I'm arguing with the FDA's, all their bylaws say that they have jurisdiction over commerce.
Yeah, which...
So what I do is I eliminate commerce from our activities.
I see.
So I created an organization called Right to Choose Healthy Food.
Mm-hmm. And that is the only thing, in my understanding, the FDA has. They only have jurisdiction with commerce in between the states.
Correct.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
I have my food sent from Pennsylvania every week.
Uh-huh. Oh, you still with Miller, Amos Miller?
Well, I have several different ones.
Yeah.
Deliver that make the food the way I want it.
Mm-hmm.
So Right to Choose Healthy Food leases their animals, so they are the lease owners. Just like if you lease a car or anything, you're completely responsible for it, and you are the owner as long as the lease is intact. So the members of Right to Choose Healthy Foods under the umbrella of each club, and I do use different clubs so I can identify where they are, or if I just had Right to Choose Healthy Food,
mm-hmm.
I have to have, you know, dozens and dozens of addresses to acknowledge it. But when I have a club name that varies, then I know who is where and what farmers are supplying, what animals we own and who's supplying who.
I see. So Right to Choose Healthy Foods, is that an organization that is getting different farmers from around the country?
Correct.
I see. And you recommend them?
Yes, I do. And, all you know, mostly they supply food to members in that area.
I see.
And when you've got a private membership, there's no government oversight, regardless of what they say.
Yeah.
So that is how we've been able to do it. The FDA filed a suit against one of my federal suits. In Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia, against one of my Amish farmers, saying that they want an injunction for him to stop making raw dairy.
Right.
And I filed a cross complaint in intervention saying that, wait a minute, these are my animals, the club, you know, these are the club's animals. The members own those animals. It's their dairy. You can't tell our farmer not to work for us and produce our food. It doesn't go on. It is in commerce. So I filed an action against them also for racketeering and fraud and other things.
You're so feisty.
Postulating, propagating wrong information, unscientific information about the dangers of raw milk when there isn't any. It's just the opposite.
Yeah.
So... And I just got their answer yesterday. I haven't read all through it yet, but it's, again, just bogus denial stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well.
So I keep fighting the fight.
Yeah, you just keep at it.
Okay. And I've been at it since 1971. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the first time I was aware that the state of California and the federal government were trying to interfere with people's rights to good, healthy food.
Yeah, it is. It's very curious. Here we are in 2011, and we have people telling us that we can't eat this or can't eat that. Pretty strange, isn't it?
It's pretty absurd, and it's frightening, and it's going to create a revolution. I mean, there's going to be some kind of a civil war if they keep it up. And there's going to be a lot of people dying because of it. I mean, I'm not a violent person, but here I am about to take, you know, I've been against violence my whole life. And here I am about to take a 7-day handgun course, a defensive handgun course.
And you're doing that because you feel like you may have to protect yourself somehow.
Yes, absolutely, and protect my food sources and everything else. And also I've been attacked by, I don't know if it's by the medical profession or by the government agencies, and kidnapped and damaged. So I will make sure that doesn't happen again.
Mm-hmm. Somebody wants to know, from Lancaster, if the Millers in Lancaster have been having a hard time.
Well, Miller hasn't. They received a warrant in April, and they didn't take anything. I've warned them. I also warned them with the about the dairy farmer that they filed suit on. I advised them a year before they came and absconded with the food and filed this suit. So they are bothering some farmers, and now they're trying to push something through the courts. And we'll see what the judge does.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see how the judge is going to favor either our right to be healthy and happiness and freedom of posterity and all of that and prosperity, or if they're going to deny us any of our rights, and then they're going to have a revolution on their hands if they do that.
Mr. Agnes, thanks so much for hanging out with us. We really had a good time this morning. Your website is We Want to Live, and 2 is a numeral 2, right?
Correct.
Well, hope to see you real soon. We've never met, but we really feel it's an honor to have you on from time to time. So keep up your work, sir.
Well, thank you, sir, and you have a great day.
Been a pleasure. Bye-bye. Agnes van der Planitz. There you have it. I'm just going to go eat a raw chicken. Just kidding. It's great, man. Okay, Open Phone Friday. Thanks to all of you who are defending the far infrared sauna. Just lots of emails. We'll talk about that tomorrow and other things on Open Phone Friday. I love you all very much. It's great to be here with you. This is Patrick Timpone. Take care.
Broadcasting worldwide from the beautiful hill country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.